Hi, I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now! For more than 15 years, CJSF 90.1 FM has been bringing Democracy Now! To the greater Vancouver area every weekday at 11 a.m. New York, this is Democracy Now!
The arrest and booking of Donald Trump was a sign, a powerful sign, that the rule of law still holds, that accountability still is in the system, and that chickens will come home to roost.
President Trump surrendered at the notorious Fulton County Jail Thursday night. He was booked on 13 felony charges for attempting to overturn the 2020 election in Georgia. Once inside the jail, Trump became the first former president to ever have his mugshot taken. We'll get the latest from Atlanta. Then, as Trump begins fundraising off his mugshot, we'll look at a growing movement pushing for mugshots to stop being released publicly. Plus, we go to Tennessee, where Republican lawmakers attempted to ban the public from bringing signs into the Capitol as protests continue over the refusal by Republican lawmakers to enact new gun control in the wake of the Covenant School shooting in Nashville. We'll speak to Democratic lawmaker Justin Jones, who was expelled earlier this year, then reelected by voters for protesting gun violence at the Capitol.
The rotunda has been shut down for the most part to the public under the orders of Speaker Cameron Sexton. This is our special session that was supposed to be around gun violence, but what we see is a party more concerned with stifling and stopping free speech.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Former President Donald Trump surrendered at Atlanta's notorious Fulton County Jail Thursday night, where he was arrested and booked on 13 felony charges over his attempts to overturn the 2020 elections in Georgia, which he lost. Once inside the jail, Trump was fingerprinted, had his mugshot taken. He was released after about 20 minutes later on a $200,000 bond. Trump briefly spoke to reporters at the airport after his release Thursday evening.
I really believe this is a very sad day for America. This should never happen. If you challenge an election, you should be able to challenge an election. I thought the election was a rigged election, a stolen election, and I should have every right to do that.
Trump's former White House Chief of Staff, Mark Meadows, also surrendered Thursday and was released on a $100,000 bond. Also booked was Harrison Floyd III, the former leader of Black Voices for Trump. Floyd is the only one of Trump's 18 co-defendants to remain jailed ahead of trial. He faces separate charges in Maryland of assaulting an FBI officer who served him a grand jury subpoena in February. On Thursday, Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis asked to move the start of Trump's trial to October 23rd after one Trump co-defendant, Kenneth Chesebrough, demanded a speedy trial. He's the lawyer who proposed Trump use fake electors to try to overturn the election. After headlines, we'll go to Atlanta, Georgia, for the latest. Ukraine's government says it has dispatched amphibious troops to the western tip of the Crimean Peninsula, which has been occupied by Russia since 2014. It's the first direct attempt by Ukraine to reclaim territory in Crimea since Kyiv launched a bloody counteroffensive in June and came as Ukraine marked Independence Day, celebrating its split from the Soviet Union in 1991. Meanwhile, the Pentagon says it'll begin training Ukrainian Air Force pilots on F-16 fighter jets at an air base in Arizona after Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky won pledges from Denmark and the Netherlands to deliver dozens of U.S.-made warplanes. Russian President Vladimir Putin has made his first public comments about Wednesday's plane crash that reportedly killed Russian mercenary leader Yevgeny Prigozhin and other top commanders of the Wagner Group. Speaking from Moscow Thursday, Putin sent his condolences to the families of the victims and praised Wagner's actions in Ukraine and several African nations.
Indeed, if there were, and the primary data indicate that there were employees of the Wagner private military company, I would want to note that these people made a significant contribution to our common cause of fighting the neo-Nazi regime in Ukraine. We remember this, we know it, and we will not forget it.
Putin described Prigozhin as a talented man who made mistakes throughout his life. Putin did not mention the June 24th mutiny led by Prigozhin that saw heavily armed Wagner forces advance toward Moscow. Meanwhile, U.S. intelligence officials have told reporters the plane carrying Prigozhin crashed as a result of an assassination plot involving a bomb or some sort of sabotage. In Kyiv, President Zelensky said Ukraine had nothing to do with Prigozhin's death and suggested Putin was to blame. In Zimbabwe, results from Wednesday's nationwide elections have started to trickle in, with parliamentary races putting the ruling ZANU-PF party and its main challenger neck and neck. Hordes of armed police with water cannons have been deployed to the National Results Center. Results of the presidential election have not yet been announced. The race pits incumbent Emmerson Mnangagwa against opposition leader Nelson Chamisa for the second time after Mnangagwa held on to power in 2018 in elections the opposition accused of being rigged. Chamisa's already accused his opponent of attempting to steal this election. Mnangagwa came to power in 2017 after leading a coup that ousted Robert Mugabe. Widespread delays during voting forced polls to stay open for a second day. Police on Thursday raided and arrested 41 local election monitors, prompting condemnation and accusations of interference by the ruling party. This is a voter in the capital, Harare.
Ballot papers are supposed to be at polling stations 48 hours before the election starts. And come the election day, there is no ballot papers. We have to wait here for 12 hours and there are no ballot papers.
China has banned imports of seafood from Japan after officials began pumping treated radioactive water into the Pacific Ocean from the site of the wrecked Fukushima nuclear power plant. It's part of a plan to release more than 1 million metric tons of wastewater over the next four decades, drawing protests in Japan and across the region. Plant operator TEPCO, that's the Tokyo Electric Power Company, says it's filtered more than 60 radionuclides from the wastewater, leaving behind only tritium. TEPCO says levels of tritium being released are significantly lower than amounts released by normally operating nuclear power plants around the world, including those in China. Intense heat waves continue to grip much of the world, putting 2023 on track to become the hottest year on record. In Bolivia, the town of Villamontes reached 113 degrees Fahrenheit Thursday, matching the hottest winter temperature on record in the southern hemisphere. Extreme wintertime heat is also gripping southern Africa, where temperature records were broken in Botswana, Namibia, and South Africa. And southern Europe's experiencing a historic late summer heat wave, with hundreds of monthly records falling across France, Portugal, and Spain. Climate scientists warn this week 80% of Italy's alpine glaciers risk disappearing by 2060. This is Italian environmentalist Wanda Bonardo.
We are here near the glacier and it is not cold. On the contrary, the zero temperature is rising again these days. There is another heat wave above 5,000 meters. The ice is retreating. The snow that covered it is almost gone.
Here in the United States, a relentless and historic heat wave is continuing with all-time temperatures records tied or broken in cities including Houston and New Orleans Thursday. In Hawaii, a new lawsuit brought by Maui County officials blames Hawaii's largest electric utility for wildfires that killed at least 115 people earlier this month. 388 people remain unaccounted for. The lawsuit accuses the Hawaiian Electric Power Company of failing to respond to red flag warnings on the day of the fires and allowing live wires to come into contact with dry vegetation. A new study links fracked gas wells in western Pennsylvania with cases of cancer, asthma, and birth problems. Researchers at the University of Pittsburgh found children who live closer to fracking sites were more likely to develop lymphoma. Meanwhile, residents of all ages had an increased chance of severe asthma, and pregnant people were more likely to give birth to babies with low birth weight. Western Pennsylvania is home to thousands of fracked gas wells. In Tennessee, the Republican-dominated legislature adjourned Thursday after a hectic special session this week on guns and public safety. This comes amidst mounting anger in the wake of the Covenant School shooting in Nashville earlier this year, which killed three children and three adults. Hundreds of protesters have rallied on Capitol grounds this week to demand lawmakers take action against gun violence. On Tuesday, a Republican leader ordered state troopers to remove people waiting to testify from a legislative hearing, provoking chaos and intense emotions. On Monday, Republicans imposed new penalties on lawmakers believed to be too disruptive and banning visitors from carrying signs. Members of the public circumvented the new rule by displaying words on their cell phones instead. A judge on Wednesday paused the ban on signs. Tennessee Democrat Justin Jones, a member of the Tennessee Three, was cut off at a House session after accusing the Republican House Speaker of racism over the new rules. Justin Jones, alongside Justin Pearson, was expelled earlier this year, then reelected by voters for protesting gun violence at the Capitol. We'll be joined by Tennessee State Representative Jones later in the broadcast. In labor news, some 150,000 auto workers could walk off the job next month as negotiations continue for new contracts with major automakers that include significant wage increases and benefits. The United Auto Workers is bargaining for pay increases of at least 40% over the next 4 years, which the union says was roughly equivalent to the recent salary hikes of CEOs at General Motors, Ford, and Stellantis. Contracts are set to expire on September 14th. This could be the largest strike of U.S. auto industry workers in at least half a century. In Minnesota, Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey has vetoed a city ordinance that would have granted a minimum wage to Lyft and Uber drivers. Frey said after the veto, he reached a deal only with Uber for a commitment to pay drivers the city's minimum wage of $15 an hour. Lyft drivers are not covered under the mayor's agreement. Minneapolis City Council member Robin Wansley said in response, quote, "This veto is an inexcusable betrayal of Minneapolis workers," unquote. Brazil's Supreme Court ruled homophobic slurs are a crime that can be punished with prison time. The ruling was welcomed by activists as the LGBTQIA community remains a frequent target of violent attacks. Rights groups said there were 228 murders of LGBTQIA people in Brazil last year, which was also the final year of the presidency of self-proclaimed proud homophobe Jair Bolsonaro. And FIFA, soccer's global governing body, has launched disciplinary proceedings against Spanish Soccer Federation President Luis Rubiales after he forcibly kissed Spanish player Jenny Hermoso during the award ceremony for the Women's World Cup. He also grabbed his crotch during the game as he celebrated in a spectator area he shared with Spain's 16-year-old princess Infanta Sofia. Rubiales is rejecting widespread calls to resign. The union representing Hermoso has demanded accountability as the assault has drawn further attention to misogyny and inequality in the soccer world and overshadowed Spain's historic victory. U.S. soccer champion Megan Rapinoe said, quote, "What kind of upside-down world are we in? On the biggest stage where you should be celebrating, Jenny has to be physically assaulted by this guy?" Unquote. Spain's acting prime minister Pedro Sanchez also addressed the issue.
It is true that there has been some behavior, in this case, that of Mr. Rubiales, which shows that in our country, there's still a long way to go in terms of equality and respect and the equalization of rights between women and men.
And those are some of the headlines. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. When we come back, Donald Trump has surrendered at the notorious Fulton County Jail on Thursday night, booked on 13 felony charges for attempting to overturn the 2020 election. We'll have more. Stay with us.
All we need in this world is love and unity. You can go on that way. You can do the things you want to do, 'cause there is no love and unity.
No love at all.
Love and unity. Every day is the same thing. You can't walk free along the street, 'cause there is no love.
by the viceroys. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, The War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Donald Trump surrendered at the notorious Fulton County Jail Thursday night, booked on 13 felony charges for attempting to overturn the 2020 election. Once inside the jail, he was fingerprinted and had his mugshot taken. He was released after about 20 minutes on a $200,000 bond. Since March, the former president has been indicted four times and faces a total of 91 criminal charges. On Thursday, Trump became the first former president to have his mugshot taken. Soon after the photo was released, Trump began using the photo to raise money for his presidential campaign. He also posted the mugshot on the social media platform X. It was his first post on the site since he was banned by Twitter after the January 6th insurrection in 2021. Donald Trump briefly spoke to reporters at the airport Thursday after he was released.
What has taken place here is a travesty of justice. We did nothing wrong. I did nothing wrong. And everybody knows it. I've never had such support. And that goes with the other ones, too. What they're doing is election interference. They're trying to interfere with an election. There's never been anything like it in our country.
Trump's former White House chief of staff, Mark Meadows, also surrendered Thursday and was released on a $100,000 bond. A hearing will be held on Monday regarding Meadows' request to move his trial to a federal court. Fulton County District Attorney Fannie Willis has subpoenaed Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger and one of his former staffers to testify at a hearing over the request by Meadows. On Thursday, Willis also called to move the start of Trump's trial to October 23rd after one of Trump's other 18 co-defendants, Kenneth Chesebrough, demanded a speedy trial. He's the lawyer who proposed Trump use fake electors to try to overturn the election. A judge has set his trial to begin on that same day, October 23rd. We go now to Atlanta, where we're joined by two guests. Hugo Lowell is a reporter for The Guardian, who's closely covered Donald Trump's indictment in Georgia. And Carol Anderson is professor of African American Studies at Emory University, the author of many books, including One Person, No Vote, How Voter Suppression is Destroying Our Democracy. Her other books include The Second, Race and Guns in a Fatally Unequal America, and White Rage, The Unspoken Truth of Our Racial Divide. Professor Anderson, let's begin with you. Your reaction to the booking, this historic moment of the former president of the United States, the first time ever, and it happened in your state, in Georgia.
It felt, given the kinds of pressure that Trump put on Atlanta and put on Georgia and the targeting of Fulton County as somehow this bastion of corruption, this felt like vindication. It felt like justice. It felt Nina Simone good.
This is coming on the eve of the 60th anniversary of the March on Washington. In 1963, so many marched for voting rights, for civil rights. Talk about why you see this as a civil rights story.
Oh, it was the attack on voting rights, because in Fulton County, well, in Georgia writ large, 90% of African Americans who voted for Biden. Over almost 70% of Latinos who voted in Georgia voted for Biden. And a little over 60% or so of Asian Americans who voted for Biden. What you saw with Trump's team, their attempt to wipe out those votes, it was the attempt to say that their votes were illegitimate. The votes of minorities were illegitimate, like they weren't real Americans. It was the same kind of assault that we saw in the Jim Crow era, that those weren't real Americans and their votes didn't count. It was as if the march on the Edmund Pettus Bridge in Bloody Sunday was irrelevant. And so it was seeing this kind of systemic and corrosive assault on the right to vote, and to have your votes counted. And the way that African Americans were denigrated in that assault, as illegitimate, as the source of criminality, as the source of fraud, massive rampant voter fraud, where you could have a Rudy Giuliani talking about Ruby Freeman and Shay Moss as drug dealers, passing out ballots as if they're passing out heroin and cocaine. That kind of assault on Black humanity was the same kind of assault that led to the Voting Rights Act.
Hugo Lowell, you've been reporting on this for some time. We're speaking to you in Atlanta. If you can share your response to what happened last night, as you wrote in your article earlier this week, Trump had his legal team negotiate his booking to take place during the primetime viewing hours for the cable news networks.
Well, Trump basically wanted to surrender in the evening on Thursday because he knew that if he could turn things into a spectacle, if he could turn it into a circus, he would be able to garner as much coverage as he could, and in doing so, distract from not only the severity of the charges, because he's being hit with a racketeering charge in this case, but also from the indignity of having to go through the booking process. You know, him arriving at the jail in a motorcade at the time that he wanted was as far as the special treatment that he got went. Frankly, the moment he was in the jail, he was treated like any other criminal defendant. And I think that's really important because that was not how he has been treated in any of his other criminal cases. He had to be fingerprinted. He had his height and weight recorded, even though it appears that he came up with that figure himself. And then he had his mugshot taken. And if you look at the mugshot, I think you see two sides of Trump. You see a Trump who is trying to look defiant, and that was a face that he practiced in the lead up to the booking. But you can also see a sense of fear in his eyes and the fact that this is becoming really real. And we know from speaking to his aides and his advisors that in the days leading up to his surrender, he really felt the enormity of what was coming down the line.
And can you talk about his new attorney?
You know, Trump has a history of firing lawyers when criminal investigations turn into indictments. You know, we saw it in the Mar-a-Lago classified documents case when Jim Trusty, this former DOJ official, ended up getting let go when the indictment came down. And it appears to be no different in this case. Trump previously had retained Drew Findling to be his lawyer for the entirety of the special purpose grand jury and the actual criminal investigation. And when the indictment came down, Trump ultimately flipped him out for a new lawyer, Stephen Sato, who in many ways is probably a better choice for Trump anyway. You know, Sato has this reputation of being a kind of a more of a trial attorney. He likes to beat his chest. He likes to go on TV. That was one thing that Drew Findling did not like to do. And I think it kind of underscores where Trump's mind is as he goes into trial.
And can you talk about him turning to a bail bondsman to meet the agreed-upon $200,000 bond?
Yeah, by going to a commercial bail bondsman here in Atlanta, Trump gets out of having to pay the full $200,000. He can basically put down 10% or $20,000 and satisfy his conditions of release here. And it's interesting that even though he went to a bail bondsman, he actually put up the $20,000, as we are told by people close to the former president, himself through his own money, which is unusual because all of his other legal fees and all of the other criminal investigations are being paid for by the Save America PAC. He's been paying basically all of his aides' lawyers' fees, his own lawyers' fees through the PAC, and to see him stand up this $20,000 himself was a notable departure, I think.
And you wrote a piece on Wednesday, Hugo, headlined, Trump's plan to skip debate shields him from legal exposure. Explain.
Yeah, I think this kind of speaks to how Trump's 2024 presidential campaign is so intertwined with the legal team. You know, I think people like to think, where does the legal team end and where does the campaign begin? But really, it's all wrapped up in the same operation. And that has its benefits, but it also has its drawbacks, because every time Trump has given televised remarks, whenever he's confronted with difficult legal questions, Trump seems to say a little bit too much and incriminate himself a little bit further. You know, the last two times that Trump was on TV, when he did the CNN town hall, he exacerbated his legal exposure with respect to the writer E. Jean Carroll, who the day after losing his civil case to, and he was that basically a jury said he was a sexual assault perpetrator, he went and doubled down in his claims. And then when he was on TV with Fox in an interview, he basically conceded to holding on to classified documents even when he had been subpoenaed. And so I think there was a palpable fear among his lawyers and his aides that if he went and did the debate and he was cornered with a legal question, he might say something that would deepen his legal trouble. And so I think there was a sense of relief that ultimately he did not go to the debate and cause himself further problems.
And Hugo Lowell, talk about these other developments. For example, that Cheeseborough asked for a speedy trial, which people are entitled to, and a date has been set for October 23rd, which has implications for all of the co-defendants, or as they are called, co-conspirators. And also Mark Meadows wanting to take this to federal court, and the hearing set for Monday, where now Brad Raffensperger, Georgia's Secretary of State, has been subpoenaed to testify.
No, you're starting to see what happens when you have 19 defendants in a criminal case. And what is happening is basically you are getting different conspirators with diverging interests compared to Trump. You know, Trump's overarching legal strategy in all of these cases is to delay. He wants to delay past the presidential election because if he wins and he can, you know, install himself as president, he can avoid any sort of criminal liability that comes with a potential conviction because he will be in office. But that's not necessarily the interests of the other defendants. You know, Meadows, for instance, the former chief of staff, wants to remove his case to federal court. We expect Trump to want to do the same. But, you know, how is Meadows going to defend himself? Well, he might say that he was working at the behest of the president. That's not exactly great for Trump. As for Ken Chesbrough, the lawyer who came up with or was implementing the fake electors scheme, you know, he moved for a speedy trial in Georgia, which under local rules here means trial will come, in two grand jury terms, and that's what, as you said, has been set for October 23. But that is not in Donald Trump's interests. Again, you know, Chesbrough gambled a little bit here and thought maybe the district attorney wouldn't be ready to go to trial. But as we have reported in kind of the past several weeks, the delay from the end of the special grand purpose grand jury to the indictment appears to have been time where the district attorney was anticipating these pretrial motions and these pretrial rulings that might come and basically ensuring they would be ready to go to trial. And this might be the thing that turns around and bites them where they didn't anticipate it.
And can you talk about Harrison Floyd III, the former leader of Black Voices for Trump, the only one of Trump's 18 co-defendants who remains jailed?
Yeah, this was quite a turn yesterday. Harrison Floyd self-surrendered himself at the jail in Atlanta without having negotiated a bond agreement. And so what happened was he was booked and processed like everyone else. And then he remains incarcerated in the jail because he doesn't have negotiated conditions of release. And I think this was quite extraordinary because it appears that the district attorney's office had tried to tell him to come to their office and negotiate some sort of conditions of release. And he didn't do that, and he self-surrendered. And ultimately, that is the predicament that he finds himself in, which is unique among all of the 19 defendants.
Let's go back to Donald Trump speaking last night.
I really believe this is a very sad day for America. This should never happen. If you challenge an election, you should be able to challenge an election. I thought the election was a rigged election, a stolen election, and I should have every right to do that.
So, Professor Anderson, he is clearly framing this as a free speech issue. You should be able to challenge an election. You should be able to speak freely. Your response?
It wasn't that he just challenged an election via free speech. It was the criminal actions that he undertook in order to overturn the will of the voters. And so the fake elector scheme, where you have people who pretend to be the real electors going into the state house and signing a form saying that they are the actual duly elected electors, and then sending that form to government officials, to the president of the Senate, to the head of the National Archives, and to a federal judge here in Georgia, signing it off saying that Georgia's Electoral College votes will go to Donald Trump, as if Donald Trump was the one who won the vote here in Georgia. And he didn't. So that was fraud. And that was part of the scheme to overturn this election. So the other component of this is he's saying that it was stolen. But there were three recounts here in Georgia. There was a hand recount of 5 million ballots. Biden won that hand recount, and that